It's hard being a self-aware know-it-all, because I am aware that I am a know-it-all and that I like to share things and that everybody appreciates it. But like my whole family is that way. So when I go to a family reunion, my dad and all my uncles have like knowledge offs or whatever. Where it's like, have you ever heard about this type of submarine? Yes. Did you know that this particular one was in this battle and like whatever? And like, yes. Did you further know? Like, okay. You guys, you're all real smart.
Did you know further a lot. Know? Good job. Super
I sent Travis Reynolds, who is works for Queen Games, that question that we had from Cocopelli. This is the reply I got first. Cat gif number one. Cat gif number two. Cat gif number three. No, wait, it gets better. Sorry about the cat gif. I was waiting for your pic to load on my phone and was going through a drive-thru and looked down and said, why did Kevin send me three gifs of cats? And then I realized it was me.
The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
Ryan Pills,
and Jonah Duke.
In the house!
Coming to you with yet another exciting podcast episode as we recount all the board games we've been playing this week. Can we recant board games? We can't do that.
We can't recant board games. That's against the show.
That was determined to be against our show policy. As we do recount some of the games that we've been playing this week, we will obviously be looking ahead as well to see what's coming to the Kickstarters. What are some of the fun things you guys had the opportunity to get to the table this week?
Well, Dan, Apprentice Dan, and I got Seamon's Project Elite to the table, and it was a very interesting experience.
Was
it was
elite?
Merciless.
Merciless.
I was out here for the start of the game, and Ryan and Apprentice Dan were like, should we do the easy level or the intermediate level? And they were like, oh, well, let's try the easy level first. And then I left. I went to the other room to check out what the other folks were playing. And when I came back, maybe 30 minutes later, pretty much the entire board was taken over by Bossers.
Both of them were
just so frustrated. Like, we're just going to lose. We're just losing.
All hope gone.
Yeah. The game, there's an event phase where you draw an event. It may be nothing, but it may be something that you have to allocate dice to during your dice phase. Then there is a spawning phase where aliens come out and they may activate immediately, moving and attacking just right off the bat. And then as part of that, you may be also drawing a boss card and putting out these really big boss aliens, which almost always activate immediately and have really annoying superpowers. And then you have your activity phase, which is the really frustrating one because you're like, I can do anything, but you only have 2 minutes to do it and you're rolling dice feverishly and allocating them. And then sometimes you'll do something and it locks the die, so you can't use it anymore. And you're trying to move and you're only getting search symbols, and then you're trying to search, you're only getting move symbols, and you're trying to fire your gun, but all the weapon symbols that you've been getting up to this point aren't showing up. You're just like,
So you're ready for the elite round version, it sounds like.
We're going to have to take another stab at it because we were just getting overwhelmed. After you take your activity phase, the aliens then all attack or take their actions if they have like a special action, and then they move. And when an alien moves, if another alien is in front of them, they push that alien forward. So, like, a single alien may end up shuffling.
You guys should have seen this swarm
towards you.
You should have seen the board. There were about 20 aliens on the board, and two of them.
Yeah, that was only halfway through.
Is this a 2-4 player game?
It's a 2-6 player game.
Oh,
yeah.
Would six players have helped some more people?
I think it might have helped. Just to have more people focusing on, like, you search this round, you attack, and that sort of thing. But it does scale, depending on...
So there's more monsters.
I don't think there... Yeah, there's more monsters. The boss, I think, is... There's... It goes, like, draw one at this many players, two, and then two again.
If there's six players, and you only play two players tonight, right? Yeah. Is that triple the number of monsters on the board? Because that would have been crazy.
I think it might be, yeah.
That's a little wild.
Do you think anyone ever wins?
Possibly. Yeah. It was our first attempt at the game, and we were just learning. We did do some things wrong. When you roll, there's one face of the die that you don't want to get, because that causes the enemies to move one. And I had immediately forgotten that it was just move one space, and not their full movement.
Oh, so
I was having the runners move three every time. I don't think it changed it too much, but yeah, it would have been a little bit easier.
It
was a killer. What'd you guys get to the table?
We've played a couple different games, some of which we'll be talking about tonight later on in the show, so I'll save those. This week, my family did get to play a new game from Blue Orange called Cross Clues. It's a little bit like Code Names meets... something else, kind of like Code Names, where you've got a grid.
Medium.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. You've got an axis of letters and of numbers, and you draw a card that has to fit into one of those grids. Like, you might draw B2.
Oh, I play this.
Yeah. And the clues on the cards, each axis also has a word that goes with it. And so you're trying to create a concept that connects two words. So I draw C2. I look on the chart. I see that I have to connect cheese and king in order to get them to guess C2, so I have to come up with a word. I think Kevin had Limburger or something exciting. I don't know what the king of cheeses is, but you give the clue, and then everybody kind of gets to look at the options on the table and narrow down where they think it's supposed to fit. If you get the right spot, you add it to the grid. If you don't, you discard the card, draw another one. The crazy thing is it's simultaneous, so everybody's playing at the same time, trying to come up with words and clues that can fit in there. We did play it a little, like, half version tonight, because it was still on the table.
Still counts.
Mm-hmm. But the thing that I enjoyed was just that my kids were able to play it pretty well. I was surprised by I don't know if this is a house rule that we made up, but if you got frustrated and couldn't come up with a clue for your word, we just let them draw another card. They didn't do that very often. They were able to come up with good clues that connected the two words pretty quick. And so it had the same feel, kind of, as a Code Names party game, but way less downtime. That's my only complaint with Code Names is sometimes a bad clue giver can take a half hour trying to come up with that clue.
There are rules about that. There's a timer in the game.
That's a good thing. On this game, you have a timer counting the whole thing, so you're trying to get as many clues done as you can in the amount of time. And it's a fun little small box party game that fit our family well, and I think could have some good laughs and some fun with a group as well.
I'll add it to the next Saturday morning board game show.
There you go. What kind of stuff did you guys get to play this week?
Well, it's been a little while. It wasn't this week, but it was recently. We played Taiwantin Suyu.
Oh, yeah?
From Board and Dice, designed by David Tertsky. And this is one of those heavy tea games. Mm-hmm. So, Teotihuacan, Tikenu,
Trismegistus.
Taiwantin Suyu, this is the most recent one, the Incan Empire. We played a 4-player game, and I don't think Kevin was too much of a fan of it. Would you like to elaborate at all, Kevin?
I liked other games better.
So you have this board that has, I don't know, the temple area. It's kind of like a pentagon shape.
There's 100 different icons around the board.
I feel like I would love it already.
But there's like probably like 6 icons that are just multiplied all over the board, and they're about like an inch big, and you're connecting to different actions around the board.
So
are you saying you didn't like it because you might just need glasses?
No.
It is a little bit of information overload when you look at it. You have some cards in your hand with certain symbols. So if I have, I'll just say symbol X, and I want to play one of my workers on an X, I need to find where the X's are. And then they're going to have several action icons around the X. And then you also have to calculate the cost of placing that person, because depending on where it is in relation to where your high priest is on the board, you're going to have to pay food resources. So you're like, oh, I can do this X for free. Oh, that one. Oh, it's going to cost me this plus this plus this. I don't think I have that much. So there is a lot of calculating going on. You do have a player aid that does talk about all this stuff and gives you the costs and says what all the icons are. So I think on a second play, it wouldn't be as overwhelming, but there is just a lot to process.
Are all the icons just abstract symbols, yep, or do they represent
squiggly lines and circles?
Well, those are the god tiles, the cards.
Yeah.
Right,
the icons for the actions are pretty easy to understand.
Yeah. But I felt very restricted throughout the whole game. I was like, oh, I just want to do some building, or I want to do some resource gather. I just want to do certain things. I'm like, oh, I don't even know. Like, oh, where should I go on the board? All right, so I'm spending my whole turn where on the board can I do what I want to do? Oh, there it is. Oh, I don't have enough potatoes to do it. Never mind. So
interesting. Yeah, I'm going to Google some pictures to see what it looks like.
So I probably enjoyed it the most out of our group.
Did you win?
I did,
mm-hmm,
by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's
always a good game if you win.
I also read the rule book. Too.
I started timing the turns between how long it got back before I got back to my turn. It was a long time.
Mm. So
how many players?
Four. It was all of our first time. I did read the rules and I taught it, so I had probably the best understanding of how it all worked.
I just got so frustrated. That's why I was like, I just don't care. I'm just going to put my guy over
here. Kevin may have thrown his cards across the table at one point.
Oh, man! Where was the slow-mo replay?
It's been a while since that's happened.
Now, Board Game Geek does list this as a 4.11 weight out of 5, so it's definitely a heavier game. Lots of decisions to make, lots of options on your turn, so trying to figure out what you want to do, and if you have someone with AP or it takes a while, they could get that overload.
How
and just shut down.
Total gameplay?
It was a 3.5 to 4 hour game.
3.5. What is, I need to know, what is Caverna on the weight scale these days? Is it pretty light? What's the, takes a long time to play that game, but it's not,
I would say,
difficult.
It's a medium weight game just because of the length of the game.
Right.
But so I would say that I personally like Takenu more than Taiwan Tinsuyu. Maybe I'll get a chance to play it again. Don't know. I thought it was interesting, but it is going to be long, especially the first time, just with all of the iconography and everything that you're trying to figure out.
Board Game Geek rates Caverna as a 3.78. So a 4.11, ugh, that's rough.
Yeah, well, I don't consider Caverna to be a difficult game. I was just time period. It takes me 3 hours to play that usually. So that was the first one.
Yeah,
that
popped.
And I can see it on the shelf. So
it says
into my head.
210 minutes. So yeah,
ranked.
Well, Taiwan Tinsuyu, it says 1 to 2 hours.
Similar to 120 minutes.
No, 210.
Oh, not even on the scale. Let's see. What else do we get to play this week? I feel like I've played several games. Were they all just Kickstarters?
Did you play anything on Halloween?
I did. I played Potion Explosion for the first time in probably 3 years, which was still fun.
Oh, this is a great game. You know why?
Because Jonah won.
Because I won. They're always good games and you win.
Jonah actually did crush us, too. It wasn't even just a win.
I only won by 4 points. I had way more potions.
Right. The stack was huge.
Yeah, but they were points all low pointers. So.
It doesn't matter how you win.
It's true, though.
He pulled it off.
You don't have to write that explanation in the scorebook. You just put your name, a little star, circle it.
And the win.
Yep.
We played Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition with some folks the night before Halloween.
The Halloween Eve.
Yeah.
Did you win?
We did.
We did.
Yes.
It was a close one. It was one of the expansions.
Mm-hmm.
serpent.
Yeah, the something or other. The people in the manor thing. Were like turning into serpents.
Ooh,
it was pretty creepy.
Creepers. Yeah. So. Excellent. Well, let's take a moment from here to give a shout out to our sponsors.
This episode, we have two sponsors. Renegade Game Studios is bringing Power Rangers the Deck Building Game to crowdfunding on November 10th. This is not going to Kickstarter, it's going to CrowdOx. And Kevin is going to be talking about this a little bit more in our Kickstarter Conniption segment. Our other sponsor is Lucky Duck Games, and they have two games releasing soon. Kingdom Rush, released on November 6th, and Chronicles of Crime 1400 is releasing on November 12th.
And Kingdom Rush is the Rift in Time board game.
Right, sorry. Kingdom Rush, Rift in Time, the board game based off of the app. I have a how-to-play video that you can watch on our YouTube channel for that. And then the Chronicles of Crime is based on their app-assisted kind of mystery game, but this is set in the 1400s. And we actually have a giveaway. Lucky Duck Games is supplying a copy of Kingdom Rush Rift in Time and Chronicles of Crime 1400. So Will or Sarah, do you want to tell our listeners how they can enter for a chance to win these games?
Sure. You can head to tantrumhouse.com and scroll down just a bit on that homepage. And on the right, there is a button that says Enter Current Contest. And you can put in your email address and we will select somebody who has entered the contest. And we will get your shipping address and send you a copy.
We'll do two winners.
Two winners.
One for each game.
Awesome. So make sure you enter that and you will win a chance to win one of these games.
Very cool. Two awesome sounding games. Can't wait to award those to some winners. If you haven't been hanging out with us on our Discord channel, we've been doing a lot of fun stuff over there, just chatting and talking and hanging out. We've also got our Twitch channel, which we haven't mentioned in a little while. We were playing Among Us the other day. I was playing on it two nights ago. And, you know, there's just nothing better than being the imposter and killing all your friends. So join in to see some fun stuff happening on the Twitch. From here, let's go to our Kickstarter Conniption.
Kickstarter Conniption!
This episode will be talking about four games coming to Kickstarter the week of November 9th, 2020. Kevin, start us off.
Technically, this one is not launching on Kickstarter. Like Melissa said, the Power Rangers deck building game from Renegade Game Studios is launching on CrowdOx. So this is seems like a few publishers are branching outside of Kickstarter. I know Awakened Realms is doing it, Renegade Games is doing it now, and I think I've heard of one other one that's launching another campaign. So we might be seeing publishers delving into other platforms, which is kind of interesting to me. That's another topic. Power Rangers, a deck building game, is a team versus team deck building game where you're playing either the villain side or the hero side, the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger side. And you're basically trying to reduce the other team's hit points down to zero, collecting cards throughout the game. You are hitting not only the other team, but you're also hitting battling the cards in the grid, which is basically the market where you're getting cards. And we actually did a playthrough of this game on our channel that you can check out, where Will and I were the villains.
The villains.
You were Goldar.
I was, and you were Rita Repulsa.
And Melissa.
I was the Pink Ranger.
And Ryan?
And I was the Red Ranger.
So, honestly, I've played this a few times now, and the heroes were winning every single game, and they felt a little over OP, a little overpowered, in my estimation.
Until Kevin and I teamed up with our powers combined.
Is this spoilers?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I did change my strategy up a little bit. So, see how Will and I were able to pull off a victory. That's
the spoiler, because it's worth it.
I was honestly pleasantly surprised on how well we were able to pull it off.
So. I was as well. About halfway through, I thought, we lost.
Yeah, me too.
Well, they rallied back to the same health that you had.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think you guys were going to make it in the end, but
check that out. Watch that video.
Anyway, yeah, check out Power Rangers deck building game launching on Crowdox from Renegade Game Studios, a 2-to-4-player team versus team game. Unique. I really like how what's going on in the game, so definitely check out the campaign. Ryan.
Coming November 10th is The Wanderer's Guidebook. This is a supplement to help those who play RPGs. It has a book with dry erase pages that has maps and buildings that are just like the setting for the game. And it gives you points to kind of dive off from with your world building. So to spark ideas with where your players could go. And there's also a number of NPCs and like a whole system they've created for interacting with them just to flesh out the RPGs that you're playing. With the maps they have, there's also tokens that you can put in the map itself to represent new locations and landmarks. And it's all dry erase, so you can make notes on the board itself, the book itself. It looks really awesome. I would have loved to have had this when we started our homebrew campaign with Pathfinder, just to flesh out some of the locations and such. So it's really, really cool looking. The art is all by Andrew Bosley from Everdell, Merchants of the Dark Road, and Tapestry.
You may pulling me in. That. You're pulling me in.
So it's just beautifully done.
If I played RPGs, I would definitely want to make sure I had this book.
It looks like it's a great resource. Definitely check it out. November 10th. Will, what do you got?
I'm looking at the game Four Humors, coming from Adam's Apple Games. These guys, as a publishing group, they've put out some interesting games. They do some mechanics that you just don't see everywhere else. They were the guys who put out Sword Crafters, that like three-dimensional tile sword building game. Mm-hmm. They did Thrive, which is a weird little chess game where you've got all these like picks, toothpicky almost type things that you're sticking into your pieces, and it's an interesting concept. They did Truck Off and some other games.
Oh, and Ryan did one too.
Yes. And I cannot remember the
Planet
name.
Planet Unknown?
Yes, Planet Unknown. It had like a Lazy Susan.
Yeah.
And you were pulling these almost like Tetris tile pieces off of and creating your terraformed map. And it had some really interesting interaction with the tokens and scoring.
Yeah, they just do some neat stuff. So this game, Four Humors, is from designer Charlie McCarron with art from Shirley Gong. It's a 2-to-6-player I don't even know what the words are to describe it. You're taking, the idea is that you are pharmacists during medieval times. There's a lot of like Monty Python type references in the game, which is pretty neat. The art for it is really fun. You've got a central map that has a bunch of location spots on it. And then in order to get area control on that map, you're actually bidding on different cards, kind of bidding, that come up. So four cards come up for the round. They represent different areas on the board. You pull a hand of tokens out of your own personal bag, and then you assign on your turn one token at a time to these cards, to specific slots on them. The slots reveal one of two different icons that you can play on them, and once two of the four cards are filled with tokens, everything resolves. You flip the tokens over, and then the tokens have this, it's not really like rock, paper, scissors, but it's like a hierarchy type of order that the token icons resolve in. You resolve the icons, and then whoever wins the card gets to place their token out on the board for area control. And then ultimately, your goal is to have to complete two of the four objectives for the game. And those objectives might be things like connect two different bridges, or have control of four connected spaces, or a bunch of different things like that. Once you get one or two of those completed, then there's other cards that you have personally that you can place your tokens on that you can try to achieve. And there's just a lot of fun, little, interesting things going on in the game that you can do. We didn't get to play the full game tonight. I actually would enjoy trying it again, especially now that I kind of understand a little more of the strategy. But art-wise, really cool-looking game. Concept, pretty original. Looked sharp. So definitely check that one out. What do you think, Kevin?
I was trying to figure out in my mind, because there's this area control thing going on.
Right.
What makes it so unique? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, this is like a super unique, in a way, area control game. I was like, what is making it unique? Because I figured it out.
Yeah.
In a regular area control game, you are usually seeing other players' pieces moving into other territories, and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, I just need more pieces, or I need to move their pieces out, or things like that. In this one, you don't know what's going in those different areas.
Right, they are face down.
The hidden information, I think, is the unique part of the area control.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, oh, did I think he played a heart there? Because if there end up being two hearts on the card, we win. But if we get a third heart, or if there's only one heart, then none of the hearts matter. And so it's
right.
kind of and thinking what other players have put out there.
Yeah, and I don't even know what the rules were or how we were playing it, but you could I feel like it's the type of game where you could talk through it. Well, I mean, like, what were the rules on talking? Could we have been saying, like, I'm putting a heart here, you guys. Somebody else put a heart here so we can get this together.
I don't know. Katie's the one who read the rules and taught it, and yeah.
So I think there definitely could have been a bluffing element
that we didn't really... I'm putting this on there. Oh, yeah, I think you could have totally lied.
Right. Right. Or work together or whatever. So,
sure.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was area control, although multiple people's pieces could be on the spaces. So it wasn't even like majority control. It was just fulfilling these missions, but being the first to do it. So
area influence. I don't know. Something like that.
I don't know. It was neat. Check out Four Humors coming to Kickstarter soon. Sarah, what game are you looking at?
Also coming November 10th is Catacombs Monster Pit. This is a standalone expansion coming from Elzra Games, from designer Aaron West and art from Quanchai Moria. He's the one that has done the art for all of these Catacombs games. There isn't a ton of information out ahead of the launch, but it looks to be in the same vein as most of the other Catacombs games. If you aren't familiar with the base game, you have some discs that you are flicking around in this enclosed area map. And the base game has some campaigns where you are fighting against other players trying to complete objectives. We'll see what happens, because he's done some other versions where it's like a 2v2 game or games where you have different things going on. So we'll see what this expansion brings. It's called Monster Pit, and that is coming November 10th.
One more game that we definitely need to talk about that is coming this week is Mass Transit.
Yes.
Totally didn't want to forget that.
Oh, well, there is actually three games coming from Calliope, all on one campaign. They have Mass Transit. I've gotten a chance to play this one. You have a starting hex in the center with six meeples on it, and they are all trying to get toward their home using different types of transportation. There's three different modes. So on your turn, you have a hand of four cards, and you must play two of them. And there's two different ways you can play a card. You can add it to a transit line, or you can use it to play the mode of transportation on that card and move one of the meeples down one of the transit lines. And you are playing cooperatively. It plays one to six players, and you are trying to get all the meeples home before the end of the game. So that is Mass Transit. They also have Allegory. I don't know a ton about that one. And there's one other game I can't think off the top of my head. Calliope will be doing a campaign with three different games all on that same campaign.
Cool. Another game that we really want to talk about, because we just played it tonight, but it's currently on Kickstarter, is Kokopelli, K-O-K-O-P-E-L-L-I, from Queen Games, is a competitive card game that you are playing cards.
Competitive card game makes me feel like a battle game.
Right.
Like
maybe tableau-ish building.
Yeah, tableau building. I like that, Will. Yeah, I want to say deck building at first, but it's not, because you are constructing your deck of cards at the very beginning of the game, and everyone has the same cards in their deck, but you're shuffling them. There's 42 cards in your deck, so there's a lot of cards, and you're shuffling them at the beginning of the game, so everyone's pulling cards throughout the game in a different order, and you are playing those cards in your tableau and hopefully in your neighbor's tableau too. And every card every card color has its own power that can do some really rule-breaking things. Because on your turn, you can just take two actions, which is either play cards or draw cards. And from there, you're just basically trying to get points by finishing these different ceremonies. So you can open ceremonies by playing card by playing a card, and then you can extend the ceremony, and then you can close a ceremony by having the fourth card in the ceremony, and then basically getting points for closing out the ceremony. So, yeah. All the cards, different powers.
Yeah, the tableau part was interesting because unlike most tableau games where you are building it throughout the entire course of the game, in this one you do kind of finish it after you put that fourth card in, and then you start it over again with another card from your deck. The game ends once you have either exhausted all of the... there's like, what are those things called in the middle of the table? Point holders.
The ceremonies.
The ceremonies. Yeah, so each type of card in the deck has a little placard that holds victory points. The first person to complete a ceremony gets the top token. Second person gets the next one. Once all of those are done, except for one or two.
Except for one, depending on the number of players.
Triggers the end of the game, or if you run out of your deck of cards. And so you're trying to play the cards from your hand on your tableau. Play the ones that will strategically allow you to manipulate your cards in the best way, and then get rid of those cards so you can finish them off and get those victory points.
Yeah, you only have normally four slots in your village, in your tableau, and you can only stack cards that are the same type. So you're limited to which cards you can actually play on your turn, because you can start a ceremony in your village, or you can add to a ceremony in your neighbor's, but only in a few of the slots.
And we should say they have to match.
Right. Yes, it does have to match. I think I mentioned that. Okay. So if Kevin has the lizards down on his left side of his board and I'm to his left, I could play a lizard from my hand onto his ceremony. But I think several times during the game, Will especially... You didn't have any cards in your hand that match anything that was in your playable areas. So you kind of
Melissa had a power card that basically let her play not only on the regular playable areas, but like my whole board and Katie's whole board. So she basically had like 12 spots that she could choose from.
Yeah, I got that down early in the game. So that really helped me to be able to play lots of cards and finish ceremonies and grab quite a few points.
Right. And the interesting thing is that we all had the same cards in our deck. It was just when they come out, when did you get to play them? You're right. A couple of times I just kept drawing because I had some of the wild cards in my hand and I was like, I'm just going to wait because I think I can finish. Yeah, I was like, I think I can finish two or three on a turn. I just got to get the right combination of cards in my hand. So yeah, definitely interesting and different strategies that you could take, even though you're all playing with the same cards.
I mean, powers can be like taking extra actions, getting points for doing certain things. And the other really interesting thing is we played with the 12 different ceremonies in our game, but there's 25 to choose from. So every game is
totally different. Yeah.
The
combinations, the powers, you think about it, we just played with 12 of the 25. So.
Right. Yeah, that is actually crazy to even consider because I felt like all the powers were very different. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they could cram 25 different ones into that, into just the base game, I'm sure this could have expansions as well.
It's on Kickstarter right now. They're doing well. So.
And I don't think we mentioned it, but it's designed by Stefan Feld.
Oh, that makes more sense. Check that out.
Designer with lots of games under his belt and games with lots of variability in them.
Nailed it. So at what point in this episode are we going to talk about Mandalorian?
Stay to the end for a definitely spoiler-y version of
I have to wait till the end? Okay. All right, you guys hang around
after
to the end.
The end credits.
And this is just episode one of season two.
Right.
What we have going on this week on our YouTubes, I can share with that real quick.
Do it.
You can definitely check out videos that from some of the games we mentioned tonight, like Four Humors. We have a live playthrough going on Tuesday night, so check that out if you're interested in that game. The Power Rangers deck building game, Mastering. So we got some of those overview videos going on. And then
we also have a playthrough of Hibachi. We got to play this one this past weekend.
The flipping game or a dexterity?
It's a dexterity game in that you're throwing tokens. There's a board with several different places on the board that are bowls of food, and you're trying to throw your disc into one of those bowls to try and gain ingredients to complete dishes. So that will be one that'll be an exciting playthrough to watch, hopefully.
Yeah, that should be, it should be a lot of fun. It was fun to play. We got to try it out. I think, was that another Halloween one? I don't remember.
It sure was.
And
I would have won, but Will cheated.
That's right. Totally. Did it. I don't know how I cheated, but I probably did. I'll take credit for it. yeah, that one does require some skill and definitely strategy and turn order. And yeah, fun little dexterity game where you're trying to fulfill orders, make ingredients, flick Jonah's pieces off of the spaces that they're supposed to be on so you can get the ingredients.
I think the first time we played it, we played the first player marker wrong. When you get the first player marker, that really is the like your last, isn't it like your last or something like that? Is that what we decided?
Yeah, we didn't quite do it correctly.
Are you supposed to be last with the bottle of white sauce?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense because going first is not good.
Correct.
Yeah. You take it, so you're first for the resolving, but then it still passes the next round, so you will be last in the next round.
Okay.
So
I really love the first player marker in this game.
Yeah.
You're making these hibachi dishes, and it's the bottle of white sauce, which is great. It's this little tiny bottle.
Yeah. So, the really important is you pass every round, you're passing that bottle. So whoever did get it is going to be last, which is super important.
Yeah, you want to be flicking last so that you can get all the bonus spaces and all that good stuff.
Interesting.
Whole new game when you watch the live playthrough. Be ready for it. also on the calendar, I noticed coming up next week this week in future time is the Mace Convention in Charlotte. I think intern Andrew, is going to be hanging out at that event. So if you'll be there as well, swing by and say hi. That convention's been going on for like 30 years, I think. It's some crazy long number. And so he'll be playing some games and maybe even teaching a little cartographers, I think. Cool. So you can hang out and say hi if you're in the area for that one. I don't know what else is on the calendar. There's not a whole lot. This is the like holiday slowdown season, which is kind of nice, which just means we hopefully have more time to play board games.
We have so many videos coming up.
There's so many videos. Let's see. This coming Thursday, we have Rule Benders is a Kickstarter that'll be hitting the 16th. We got a playthrough of that so you can see it before the launch. We've got Creature Comforts playthrough, USS Freedom. Like we've just got
so many
lineup of probably three or four.
Maybe not a lot happening outside, but we have a lot of happening in Tantrum House.
That's good. Right. You guys can all tune in and catch the shows because apparently we're going to be live all the time and you can join us and have some fun. We always enjoy hanging out during those shows. We probably have some more giveaways we need to be doing as well. And then don't forget the giveaway that we mentioned earlier in this episode. Get on our website, tantrumhouse.com. Click on that intercurrent contest to be entered and you'll have a chance to win games from Lucky Duck Games. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Have a great week. Catch you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.
Wait, don't go anywhere. We're going to talk about Mandalorian. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
I'm out.
All right, Jonah. Jonah doesn't want to be spoiled.
See ya. Season one.
If you don't want to be spoiled, you need to hang up this or turn off the podcast right now so you don't get spoiled.
But this is just episode one.
Season two. I think this might be a new thing we do at the end of the next couple episodes as we try to keep up to date. We're going to be we're talking about these pretty fresh, but they're not going to come out for a week. So it gives you a little bit of time.
That's right.
Episode one, season two.
Yep.
We just all sat down and watched it this past week. I'll be honest, I wasn't moved.
I agree. I was not as impressed with season two's opener as the whole season one.
Yeah, so. I felt like it was a little flat.
I heard people raving about it, though. Like,
really?
I saw tons of posts on Facebook about
rehashing.
Yeah. So good, best episode, I can't wait. And that probably ruined it for me. I shouldn't have read the Facebooks. Then I might have been better. I was like,
there were no spoils in those either, except for we got our hopes up so much.
Right. And I was like, oh, man, I can't wait. It's going to be like a Star Wars movie.
And then I was like, this is a recap of an episode that already happened. Like, it was almost the same thing
of the Mudhorn
episode.
I agree. Totally agree.
I did think there were some cool moments, so we should definitely talk about those as well. Okay. Now that we've disheartened you entirely and you're all like, oh, idiots.
So how many Easter eggs were there, Ryan? Was that supposed to be
too
Boba
many
Fett's,
to count?
Was it Boba Fett's armor?
Oh, it definitely was.
It definitely was Boba Fett's armor. Okay. Like the markings, the divots and stuff.
They're the coloring. Yeah.
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 But
there were a lot of references. I will give them that.
There's some videos on YouTube. They're like 67 Easter eggs in episode. I don't know if there was 67.
I will say,
apparently there were. Yeah.
I might have been tainted a little bit because I was still editing Melissa's How to Play video
while
I was watching like the first half. So
there
I was
were,
like, I asked Melissa, I was like, what's happening?
I would have liked to have seen more at the very initial planet with like the fighting ring or whatever.
Yeah. It looked like a fun opportunity.
I don't know if I've ever been to that planet before. I'd like to see more of it.
And then it was over.
And it was over.
I did like several moments. One of my favorite moments in the whole movie was he rides into town on his horse, basically. Old Western town. Like, it was a great callback to every Western movie I've ever seen. Just riding into town, all the little shops on the left side, dirt street.
Oh, people looking at him.
Right. Walks into the bar. I was waiting for, like, the two bifold doors to, like, swing back and forth. And then there's the sheriff. Like, I liked the framing of the story. Okay. That's all.
Yeah, I did like the callbacks to some of the stuff that I grew up with like Knights of the Old Republic, but I didn't like that they used their own artistic license with how these things appeared, because I'm like, these are already established. Like, the Great Dragon has legs. Where's his legs?
Why can't I see him? Why is this pearl so humongous?
But I guess
they
were trying to say that, like, in the very first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, they pass this skeleton in the sand of some sort of snake-like thing. And they're like, oh, that's the Krayt Dragon. And when Obi-Wan Kenobi gives off some sort of howl that scares all the sand people away from Luke, that was the Krayt Dragon's call. So they're trying to tie all of these things together. So in the Old Republic games, you can collect a Krayt Dragon pearl and use it as a lightsaber crystal.
Ooh.
And it's got special bonuses and
stuff. Is it a huge lightsaber?
No. So it's just, it's like
a pearl
size thing. So, but in this, apparently this massive Krayt Dragon had a massive pearl. So it was nice that they included it. It was a little bit hard for me. I was like, that's not how I remember it. But yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I liked several moments. It was cool watching them blast around on their jetpacks. I do think they do a great job on the special effects in the movie. I like It was a movie. I wanted it to be a movie. I do like when you watch Avengers, they're so freakishly smooth with their jetpacks. And that's their style. Like, Iron Man is the master of the jetpack. In this one, they're like always a little wobbly, like a little sideways and stuff. How a real jetpack would be. So give them props for authenticity on real life jetpacks.
Because yeah. Will knows this.
Right. I watched a YouTube video of a guy with a real jetpack.
I do appreciate how they've handled, I mean, this is so early in the show. I do appreciate how they've handled Boba Fett so far.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't ruined him for me yet.
They only showed him for 11 seconds.
They sort of hinted at him in season one, and now in this, they've just like revealed,
there's a guy.
Samuera Morrison or whatever his name is. You know, that's the guy that who's going to play him.
Get ready.
He is.
Here it comes. He didn't have a helmet on.
I don't know if it was Boba Fett. It might have been a clone or something. But, I mean, if we're going to see Boba Fett, it's going to be this guy. So, yeah.
Bring it on. Come on, Boba Fett. I did like the moment when he took his helmet off and we were all like, no way, he's not a real Mandalorian. Oh, yeah, he's not a real Mandalorian.
Yeah. My first thought was like, huh, he's pretty skinny.
I was like, that armor does not fit.
Yeah, right? I did think that too. Like, Boba Fett must have been a whole lot bigger of a guy because I don't remember the armor looking that big on him.
That Baby Yoda didn't have as much screen time, except like the beginning was kind of fun at the ring when he like closed up his shell and stuff like
backed
that.
Away.
That was kind of like there were some fun moments in there.
Him in the spittoon was super cute
or disgusting,
right? Yeah. Simultaneous. What's the name of the lady who basically wants to be Yoda's grandma? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Did she ever get a name? I don't know.
She's a unique character. She does make me smile when she's on the video. She's like so awkwardly fake about it that it like makes me laugh, but in a good way. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to describe that. Oh, you're back. Let me hold the baby. Let me pull a rubber, awkward shaped baby out of your arms and take it from you.
And then I'll charge you to babysit him.
Right, exactly. Is he developing as a character now that he lets droids work on his ship? Is that like a character development statement?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like IG-11 opened his heart to droids.
Oh, makes sense. Yeah. Harkening back.
Yep. So, okay, can you tell us anything about the end character? The very last screen was this guy that turned around.
That's Temuera Morrison, who played Jango Fett.
That is Boba Fett.
Who probably. Boba Fett is an unaltered clone of. And all the clones are clones of. So, yeah. He's done a lot of Star Wars stuff other than just the prequels where he's come back and done the characters.
Voice acting and stuff.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Well, there was a nice story arc in season one. I liked what was happening in season one. And it stands as a little cliffhanger at the end of season one. And I felt like this was like, this whole first episode could have been in the middle of season two. And I've been like, okay, whatever. Yeah. Personally, it was not a good first episode.
Yeah. When I had my dad watch season one, because he was coming over to spend the weekend or something right before the last episode released. So I was like, you got to watch this because we're all going to watch the last episode together. I had him watch all but like two of the episodes. So like these are just skippable episodes. They don't have anything to do with the story. The story doesn't progress at all.
The prison break one.
Yeah. So I was like, you don't need to watch these. So that's kind of how I feel about this episode. There's a little bit of story at the very beginning with, you know, trying to find more Mandalorians or whatever. But the rest of it, yeah, totally skippable.
And there was also,
wouldn't affect anything.
Maybe I missed this in the previous episode. Didn't he start off saying, like, I'm on a quest to find the rest of the Baby Yoda's species or whatever?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Was that something he specifically set out to do?
Yeah, the armorer Mandalorian lady was like, you need to, now his surrogate father. You need to find his.
Did you not watch the previously thing that they put at the beginning of it?
I think I was like still popping the popcorn at that point. So that was her dying quest to him or whatever.
Not dying.
Oh,
I think she's still alive. Die?
Yeah, as far as we know, she's still alive.
Okay. Everybody else died except for her. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, she was still hanging out alone. So do I.
Not like to see people die.
I do. I want to see it. The fight. I want to see how 100 stormtroopers took out 100 Mandalorians, but then he could take out 100 by himself.
I mean, the Mandalorians are clearly superior, so I want to know how it happened.
Right. Had to be a sabotage inside job.
Probably.
It's probably Boba Fett.
I am still looking. I am still looking forward to the whole season. Like Will said, the whole cinematography of it is amazing. I am hoping that the rest of the season is better than episode one, is what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Me too, fingers crossed.
I feel like they might be trying to pack too much into it because everybody has such high hopes. They're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we added these bajillion things and just stuffed it?
Every reference.
Yeah. I don't know if it can handle
it. Pandering to the fans.
Yeah.
Just make good shows, you guys.
Don't fail us, please.
This is the way.